Hi, I'm Lisa Davis. Welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM. At 17, today's guest, Karen Ager, was told she had rheumatoid arthritis. Rheumatoid arthritis, RA, is an autoimmune disease that causes chronic inflammation of the joints. Rheumatoid arthritis can also cause inflammation of the tissue around the joints, as well as in other organs in the body. Autoimmune diseases are illnesses that occur when the body's tissues are mistakenly attacked by their own immune system. Karen wrote an incredible memoir, Enemy Within, a memoir of strength, determination, and acceptance. Karen, welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM.
Good morning, Lisa. Thank you for having me on your show.
Yes, Karen, I'm so glad to have you on. Now, in your wonderful book, Enemy Within, you talk about, in the beginning, about being at Black Rock on Melbourne's Port Phillips Bay, and you were sharing stories of being 15 and wanting to fit in with friends and also dealing with some of the issues that your parents were struggling with. And you talk about that being the first time on that beach when you felt the pain of RA. Can you tell us about that experience and a little bit about what was going on in your life at that time?
Sure. Yeah, I had literally just gone down the beach for the day like any other carefree sort of adolescent. I was down the beach with my cousin. I'd been lying on my towel. I had a sharp pain to my right hip. And I discovered that I couldn't really move my leg without being in excruciating pain, and I couldn't get off the towel. So I had to be carried home on that particular day by my cousin and put to bed. And that was really the first sign that I had a problem. And that's the frightening thing about rheumatoid arthritis, is that it can come on so quickly like that. One day you're okay, and then the next day you're not. So that's how it started with me. And it was kind of tricky because my parents were going through marital issues at the time, and I think that perhaps when that happens in one's marriage, you tend to overlook things that you might normally notice. Mm-hmm. And so I was really put to bed with an aspirin, and we thought it was growing pains.
Oh, yeah, you're 6 feet tall, is that correct?
Yes, I am.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the other thing, too, I thought was interesting is, in addition to your parents kind of being absorbed in their own issues, you wrote, quote, "In Australia, we tend to get on with things. We ignore problems or discuss them with our friends rather than see a doctor or stretch out on the couch and see a shrink." And I thought that was really telling, that not only was it something in your personal life with your family, but it was sort of an overall cultural attitude.
Right. It actually is. We do. We have this attitude that I think it might come back from the convict days, I guess, when we were a colony, just that we just get on with it and we don't really focus on the negative. We're more positive, I think, as a culture, and we just sort of keep on going.
Yeah, and that can be, it's good and tough.
Yeah.
When there's something that actually really needs to be looked at. And, you know, speaking of that, when you got the news that you had the RA when you were 17, you know, you were a teenager, and a normal teenager instinct is to block it out and to be in denial. And if you can tell us about that ride home with your mom and how she reacted.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting because when I was writing the book, my editor came back to me and said, you know, really wasn't that quite a momentous occasion when you're actually, you know, diagnosed with your rheumatoid arthritis? But it really wasn't, because at that time of being 17, I really thought that I was indestructible. I thought it was like a bout of having influenza or the flu, and I just really slipped straight into being in denial. Even though I was in pain, I just thought, well, I'll get on the medication and that'll be the end of it. But, of course, it wasn't, and you know, I've had a 30-year journey with the illness. So.
And your mother, was she sort of in denial as well in the beginning?
You know, again, I think because the marriage was falling mm-hmm. apart, and she wasn't really emotionally present for me. You know, I guess she was in denial, and certainly my dad was. So it's hard when your children are sick. It's painful.
Oh, yes. Yes, I have a daughter who has some special needs, and there was definitely some people in our lives that had a little more, you know, it's difficult. It can be really challenging to want to actually say, yes, there is something wrong.
Right, and you can't judge something. People for that, you know, it's
of
just
course
life.
Not.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and You ended up, you write a lot in the book about relationships and what can happen to women with disabilities. And you talked about the high statistics of violence against women and how the numbers are even higher among women with disabilities. And you yourself had gotten in some relationships. And if you want to talk about that,
sure.
I was really struck by that in your honesty and what happened to you.
Yeah, it was kind of, it was cathartic to write about it, but it was difficult as well. Yeah, what I discovered when I was researching the book, having been assaulted myself when I was 17, I discovered that disabled women are more likely to be victims of domestic violence. And in fact, in the States, they've got the highest rate of personal violence of any group in society today. And I, you know, I had to wonder why that is. I had to wonder if as a couple you've got more pressure on you because one person's disabled, or whether there's just that the cycle of not wanting to leave and get out of that relationship because it's so much more difficult when you are disabled. It was quite alarming to me, actually.
Yes, I'm sure. You know, I was thinking, too, that it might also be that maybe women who have disabilities might attract men that are insecure and that were abused themselves, and they're looking for someone that they can dominate and say things like you had things said to you, like no one else is going to love you. No one
right.
else is going to take care of you like I do, even though they did not take care of, you know, you
right,
and I'm sure
exactly.
the other women.
And I think then and then having the disease on top of that prolongs the abuse.
Yes. Yeah, and you also were really isolated, and you took on the burden of your disease. You know, you took it on with your mother, but you also didn't tell a lot of people. And that, I know you talk about that as a real burdensome secret for you. Why did you think that happened that way for you, that you didn't want to share? Was that cultural, do you think?
No, I don't think so. Because if you read Michael J. Fox's first book,
yes,
he talks a lot about that as well, about the isolation of the disease and the burden that one feels because it's humiliating in some ways to have a chronic illness. A lot of your dignity is taken away from you and you have no control over your body and that sort of thing. And I just think that takes a long time emotionally and psychologically to come to terms with.
Yes, that makes a lot of sense. And you also write about your fear. You write, quote, my fears are beginning to attack me as much of the disease. What were some of the things that you were afraid of?
Just fear of being in a wheelchair for the rest of my life. Fear of having all my hopes and dreams taken away from me because of the illness. And just fear that I'd get a lot worse, I guess, because, you know, it is, rheumatoid arthritis is a chronic degenerative illness. So that's frightening for a young woman.
Extremely frightening. I had tears in my eyes when I was reading about when your mother was taking care of you after you had gone off the medication. Mm-hmm. And I admire you for trying to go drug-free, but there's some things that it's really tough. And it's funny because I'm a health educator and I'm really into holistic mm-hmm. health, but I definitely, and this might upset people, but there are some things that I think medication can help. Obviously,
right.
And that was such a trying time for you. And if you want to talk about that a little bit with your mom.
Sure, Lisa. Yeah, it was difficult. Mum had decided that she would take me to a sort of a natural therapy clinic in England, and I spent nearly 3 months there, and I got off my prednisone and all the medications that I was on, but it didn't work for me. You know, we tried the health alternative, and what I've realized since then really is that it's a combination of both for rheumatoid arthritis anyway. You have to have a healthy diet and lifestyle and then have control by the disease. But when I eventually got back to Sydney, Mum had to give up work to become a caretaker. I was in a 4-floor walk-up. I couldn't wash myself, eat. Hygiene was difficult, all those sorts of things. And I remember clearly one day when the telephone was ringing, and it was back in the days when it was attached to the wall with cord.
Mm-hmm.
And I crawled over because I couldn't walk at all at that stage to pick up the phone. And I just as I kind of got to the phone in the kitchen, it stopped ringing. And at that moment, I just lay on that floor and cried in the kitchen until Mum came home, really.
I know, I was just so moved, and your strength and your determination to find a way to help, not only yourself but others, which we'll get to later. But so from there, you ended up going back on the drugs. And I know you felt like you let people down, but that, and I'm sure now you have, I would hope you have some peace of mind that you didn't. I mean, you tried and it didn't work, and you know, you needed to go on with and taking care of yourself in the best way that you could.
Yeah, and it really came down to quality of life in the end. And my mom didn't have a life, and nor did I, because I was just too sick. So I gradually sort of reintroduced the medications. That was pretty tough, though, because I had to go on massive doses of steroids to get the inflammation down. And what comes along with that are many different side effects, one of which sort of really resulted in me having to have my right hip replaced when I was 28. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, so, you know, but you get there, and that enabled me to go back into a job that I loved doing, which was teaching, and I went back in part-time, and I remember being at the interview thinking, oh, how is this principal ever going to give me a job? You know, clearly I'm not that well. And I just asked him to give me a go, and he did that. And I ended up working at that school for, you know, 7 years or so.
Oh, that's great. You know, and
yeah.
Eventually you came out to New York, and I was listening to an interview with you that was done in Australia, and you were talking about the United Nations School and how you teach the kids to use iMessages. And that cracked me up, because when I was a kid, my parents would talk about that, and I thought it meant, like, giving each other funny looks.
Right.
I thought that for the longest time. It's like, no, you want, instead of you, did you say I feel, you know, and I think that's
right.
So great. And part of the reason you had met an actor, this is so funny. I had a huge crush on Ron Silver, actually.
Oh, you did?
And he had a huge crush on you. So wait a second.
Oh, Ron Silver. I love Ron Silver.
I thought he was so handsome and just charming. I mean, just from seeing him on TV and movies and stuff. But so you had met him, and he invited you to New York, and that sort of opened the whole door of, like, oh, wait a second. Let's check out New York.
Right. And he was so gracious to me and such
yes.
a gentleman. And he would fly me down to New York, and I'd stay in his apartment in Manhattan. And,
oh,
you know,
wow.
I'd be in the kids' bedroom. And he'd be in the, you know, his room, and there was nothing. It was just, you know, he obviously wanted a relationship, but I wasn't quite sure, and I was due to go back to Australia from my teaching assignment in Canada fairly soon after I met him. But he became the catalyst for me wanting to move to New York, and I just fell in love with the city. And of course, being introduced to New York by a man like Ron Silver was quite the way to get to know the city.
Oh, yes. Yes, New York is wonderful. I try to go whenever I can. It's funny, because I'm from California, and I've been here on the East Coast in the Boston area for 10 years, and it still shocks me that I can get on a train, and in 3.5 or 4 hours on the Acela train, I can be in New York. It's just so crazy to me.
Right.
I'm thinking, wait a second, I live in California. Oh, wait, no, I don't.
Yeah.
It's a big change, isn't it?
I love New York, and I love Boston too, actually. Beautiful up there, especially in the summer.
Yes, it is. We're having a lovely summer this year. Mm. So now, speaking of summer, how does weather affect rheumatoid arthritis? I was thinking about the humidity. It seems like that would help because of the heat. And then how do you deal with the winters?
You know, I think that the weather sort of idea is more relevant to osteoarthritis.
Oh, osteoarthritis. Oh, okay.
Yeah, because this is rheumatoid's in the blood, and it's in the immune system.
Oh, that's true.
Sort of thing. Of course, it's bad if I, you know, get caught in the cold or anything, because my immune system's suppressed. But, you know, to be honest, though, I don't really have a problem with that. The only thing about New York is that I can't go swimming like I used to in Australia, I guess.
Yeah, I lived in Hawaii for a while, and boy, I miss that.
Right, I bet. Beautiful.
Once you're swimming in the ocean and it's warm, it's hard to go back to a chlorinated pool.
Right, isn't it?
You know, something that that you have, which I thought was so important for people listening if they're dealing with chronic diseases, is that you had actually 12 steps to coping with chronic debilitating diseases. And if we can just go through those, I think that, you know, my mom had some chronic autoimmune stuff that they were never able to diagnose, and she had knee problems, and she passed away about 15 years ago, but she had a lot of different things, and I saw how tough it was for her, and I have a lot of empathy. So I know that the first one you said is cry, and I think that's so important.
Yeah, I think, you know, and that's on my website, actually.
Yes, yeah, that's where I got it from.
Arthritis.com. Yeah, I think really what I wanted to do with those 12 steps is talk about, you know, it being similar to the grieving process in many ways when you get diagnosed with a chronic illness, and that you have to really allow yourself to feel the emotions of that. And I know Christine Applegate, when she was diagnosed with the breast cancer, she said, yes, I was angry. I was really angry. And people applauded her for coming out and saying that, because you have to allow yourself to feel all those things. So in that 12 steps, I've got things like crying and being angry and, talking about it. You know, step number 10 or something is allowing yourself to just talk about it with at least one or two good people, and surrounding yourself with a support network, and understanding also the pain that it can be for your caretaker as well, or your husband or your spouse, that they are grieving as well. So it's just, yeah, people should go to my website and check that out, because it's relevant to any illness, really.
Yes, it really is. And one that is really tough, I'm sure, is number 4, which is accept that you have this condition without giving into the disease. Don't waste time and energy by living in denial. That can be a tough one.
Well, and that took me many years to get to that stage. It took about 15 years, to be honest.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm sure. Sure it did. And I also like number 5. Well, I like all of them, but number 5, self-educate. Learn all that you can about your disease, that you can empower yourself with knowledge. This was my mom's mantra: prepare for your doctor's appointments and go armed with questions. She would have a tape recorder and a pad of paper so she didn't forget what he or she said, and she would just take every little note she could. And that really helped give her that sense of control that she was really fighting this, because she had ovarian cancer, which unfortunately, like I mentioned earlier, she passed away, but she did her darndest not to, and really with her other health issues as well, just really, you know, be there and do what you can, I think is really important.
And I think sometimes you feel when you're at those appointments like you've lost the control of your body and everyone else is in charge of it but you, and making the decisions for you. And that's why it's so important to be educated, both before you go to those appointments and also researching the information afterwards that you're given.
Yeah, it's really important. The other thing you mentioned was connecting and talking to people. And you talk about talking with people who have chronic or debilitating diseases, and I am really big into support groups. And I'm wondering if that's something that you found helpful as well.
Yeah, in fact, you know, it was tricky because when I came here, the Arthritis Foundation, they're doing a wonderful job, but I couldn't get to their support group meetings, which were often run during the business day. So I've started up a support group in Manhattan, and, you know, it's not all doom and gloom. We go along and we have, you know, a meal and a glass of wine and a bit of a laugh, and we talk all about what shoes are good for our feet, and we talk about, you know, alternative therapies, acupuncture, and you know, and we make recommendations to each other. So I think that I've been the catalyst for that, and I think it's really, really helped a lot of people who come to my group. We meet every 2 months.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. And speaking of being a catalyst, you know, one of the things that really struck you, I know, is when you came out to New York, or just being in America, you realized that there was drugs, injectable, right, drugs that were available that you weren't available in Australia. And if you can tell us about some of your advocacy work around that and some other issues for rheumatoid arthritis.
Sure. Well, I moved over to the United States in 2000, and at the time I was really, really quite sick with the RA and flaring a lot, and I really came over with a bag full of prescription medications to try and control the disease. But what happened was it wasn't really being terribly well controlled, because my illness is quite aggressive. So eventually I did have to go to the doctor here, and to my surprise I found these new biologic medications which really try to change the immune system signals and stop what's going wrong and haywire with the immune system. So I was put on an IV infusion, and for me, the first time I tried that type of medication, it was like a virtual cure, and I actually went into clinical remission for a while. So having been so sick and not knowing, what it really was like to feel normal in the morning since I was, you know, a teenager. That was totally unbelievable for me. I was so excited about it. But what I couldn't believe was these medications were not available in Australia. So there were all these people on disability that perhaps could be working and not in pain if they could get access to these medications. So I got a lot of publicity there. I was in Time magazine and I lobbied the Australian government, and together with the Arthritis Foundation in Australia, we were able to get those medications approved and now people have access to them, which is fantastic.
That is so wonderful. You must feel so good about that. What a wonderful thing to do.
Yeah, no, that was great. They've still got their issues with that at home in terms of, there's, because of the health system in Commonwealth countries, it can be quite difficult. You have to go through a number of steps in order to get the medication. You have to be quite bad. Mm-hmm. Whereas in America now, they tend to treat the illness very aggressively with these biological medications earlier. Whereas in Australia, they can't, because they're so expensive and it's subsidised by the government, they're waiting for a while to put people on it. So I've still got more work to do there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's good.
Well, it's just, it's such a great start. I mean, a huge, huge start. And, the other thing, we're talking about medication, and you mentioned diet earlier, and I have a good friend who has arthritis. I don't know, I think it might be rheumatoid arthritis, and I was telling him about, watching out for foods that are pro-inflammatory, and is that something that's more for osteoarthritis, or does that help for rheumatoid arthritis as well?
I think, again, it's like anything. It's you have to have a good diet, and I think the crunchy foods and foods like bromelain, which is in pineapple, which has a natural anti-inflammatory, those sorts of things, lots of antioxidants, blueberries. There is some research out there that arthritics have more free radicals in their body, so the way to balance that out is with antioxidants. But,
okay.
Yeah.
And then exercise as well. You mentioned the swimming. What are you able to do now that feels good for you for exercise?
Well, my husband's a personal trainer, so he has been helping me really with strength and balance. I think they're the two biggest issues for me because, you tend to, if you've got pain, you tend not to use that particular arm, and then your muscles, aren't so good. So strength with just light weights and also lots of balance activities, squats and that sort of thing. And I do a bit of riding on the bike.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah,
and how is your
adorable?
That's great. Now, how's your adorable little dog? I love the pictures of him in the pool. That was my daughter. So cute.
He has been one of the most healing forces in my life recently. I mean, the love of a dog is unbelievable. He's good. Good. He's really good, actually.
And what kind is he again?
Pardon?
What kind of dog is he?
He's
again?
A Morkie. He's a Maltese and a Yorkshire Terrier.
Oh.
Looking pretty scruffy at the moment. He needs to be groomed.
Oh, I like him that way. That is so cute. Well, Karen, I want to thank you so much, and I encourage everyone to read Enemy Within. It is such a moving book, and you are such a nice person. I'm so glad you came on the show. And if you can tell us your website again and any other information that you'd like us to know.
Sure. Well, I'd just like the readers to know that really the book's thread is rheumatoid arthritis, but really the message in there is that, we all really have an enemy within, something that we have to deal with in our life that perhaps makes us feel isolated and alone. I mean, mine was my health, but for someone else it might be, a loss or a fear or a secret or something like that, something that they have to go away and deal with. And I think that my story, even though it's about partly about RA, it's really about life's journey, and so it's got a broad appeal, I think, because it's during these times of personal struggle that you really find out who you are, I think. So yes, and my website is www.karenandarthritis.com.
Great. Well, I'm so glad you came on the program. And if people want to reach me, they can go to itsyourhealthradio.org, see what great stuff's coming up. I hope everyone has a great week. Keep being healthy. Take care. Bye-bye.